From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Given a choice, would you choose to live in a multifamily building or in a single-family home?
I've lived in shared houses, I've lived in college dormitories, I've lived in studio apartments, I've lived in larger apartments, I've rented houses, have bought a house.
This is Christopher Hawthorne. He's the chief design officer for the city of Los Angeles in the mayor's office.
That trajectory or kind of mix of types is true for most people, but architecture and design and the relationship to landscape is absolutely central to this idea of making these kind of missing middle projects attractive and even the object of desire.
And I did so because yet again, there has been pushback against upzoning in Los Angeles. Specifically, SB 50, State Senator Scott Wiener's bill that proposed overriding local zoning in order to increase density around transit, was rejected for good at the end of January. Advocates of greater density have blamed NIMBYs for holding back development of much-needed housing. But are NIMBYs the only obstructionists, or is there a bigger hurdle to changing housing policy? Californians' love of the single-family home, because that is a love that is shared by both NIMBYs and many YIMBYs, or yes-in-my-backyarders. Most Californians will, if they have the means, purchase a single-family home. Why? Because it brings personal freedom, design choice, and the chance to build equity. Is it possible to build multifamily dwellings that can offer those same attractions? Well, it turns out that Christopher Hawthorne and colleagues at the mayor's office are working on this, and they may be looking to you for some great ideas.
So if you think about the role that the single-family house plays in the popular imagination in Los Angeles, there was a huge attention and focus on producing these kinds of images, selling that idea and that ideal. So the case study program, the photographs of Julia Shulman, think of paintings of David Hockney. And what we haven't done is produced similar models for a new kind of housing typology in this low to medium density multifamily territory. And that's where we've been concentrating our work. How can we, because it is a kind of hearts and minds issue as much as it's a policy issue, as you're suggesting.
The city has made great strides with ADUs or accessory dwelling units or granny flats, and also with multifamily, mostly rental housing that's close to mass transit. But what about something to invest in for the next generation of Angelenos? The answer, Christopher says, lies in one or two story wood frame housing, 2 to 8 units.
And you're right that there continues to be anxiety, resistance to proposals like SB 50, which would have pretty dramatically increased the density in a lot of low-riser single-family neighborhoods. What we haven't done from a policy point of view, or I think in the architectural community, is produce, as you're suggesting, really positive prototypes that make clear the kinds of benefits that building in this range, so-called missing middle, or let's say 3 to 8 unit projects would bring to neighborhoods in this low to medium density multifamily territory. And that's where we've been concentrating our work. How can we, because it is a kind of hearts and minds issue as much as it's a policy issue, as you're suggesting. So we're thinking about how we can work with architects to produce some new models of that kind of housing, and we should have some announcements about the details of those projects in the next couple of months.
Is this a design competition? What is this that you're referencing, to the extent you can share information?
It's likely to be a design competition. It's likely to think about how we can produce new prototypes and how we can begin to show the benefits, and this is a really important part of this conversation, the benefits that this kind of housing might bring to communities. So if you actually start a conversation about the future of people's neighborhoods, not by saying, what do you think about SB 50, or would you like to have a 4-story building next to you, but actually say, how would you like to see your neighborhood evolve? What would you like to see in your community that you're missing? People talk about the ability to age in place and not have to move out of their neighborhood if they want to downsize from a single family house. They talk about the ability of their own children to afford to live in a community. They talk about security, resilience, eyes on the street, supporting local retail, walkability, all things that would actually be delivered by a thoughtful kind of missing middle housing strategy that, importantly, is tailored to Los Angeles, its own particular architecture, cultural history. We have a really remarkable architectural legacy of projects right in this scale. So bungalow courts, projects like by Irving Gill, early projects by Schindler, Neutra, other modernists, projects like Village Green and, you know, mid-century. So we have our own kind of architectural and civic history to draw on here.
Right. You've been framing this, as I understand it, in terms of sort of what homeowners in an existing neighborhood will accept. But is the next stage of thinking about this to ask, how do we persuade or entice the next wave of homeowners to not even desire primarily the single family house, but to actually desire some kind of ownership in a triplex, a duplex, a multi-unit building? And how do we get to that place where people literally covet? That's the piece that is missing so far. And is that what your competition or whatever it is you're working on is aiming towards?
Very much so. And I can give you an example from my own rental history. I think this has to do with design and architecture first and foremost. So I think one thing we forget, first of all, is that people across their lifetimes, their adulthoods, live in all kinds of different types of housing. So I've lived in shared houses, I've lived in college dormitories, I've lived in studio apartments, I've lived in larger apartments, I've rented houses, have bought a house, and that trajectory or kind of mix of types is true for most people. And so people don't necessarily just occupy one of these categories. They occupy across a lifetime many or most of them. But architecture and design and the relationship to landscape is absolutely central to this idea of making these kind of missing middle projects attractive and even the object of desire, right? So I lived with my now wife in Oakland in a project by Irving Gill from 1919. I saw a listing on Craigslist when we were in the market for an apartment, and it's about a 12-unit project around a central garden, a single story with one unit that's two-story. And it was so beautifully designed. I was absolutely desperate to live there. I immediately, you know, dashed off a letter to the landlord about how much it would mean to me to live in a place like that. And it was at precisely the level of density that we need to be building in Los Angeles. And there were a lot of lessons I learned living there. So first of all, it was so beautifully designed that I did have that level of desire, covetousness about wanting to join that community. But also living there, I learned a lot of very simple but important lessons about how you can use design to help negotiate this relationship between shared and private space. So each of the units had a private patio that opened onto a communal central lawn with a fountain. It felt very private, but there was a lot of sense of it being a kind of communal space as well, and there was more interaction among the neighbors than in any place that I've ever lived. And Gil, you know, Horatio West Court, which is a great project of his in Ocean Park in Santa Monica, is highly coveted. I don't know what those apartments sell for, but millions, plural, I would say. Probably there's six, I think, units in that project, and that's also a really good example. And so we have an opportunity to go back to that history and think about the lessons that those designs offer and sort of recover the lessons that were obscured by the blinding power and allure of the single-family house in the second half of the 20th century, which was so central to architectural production in L.A., but also so central to how L.A. understood itself and advertised itself to the world. And we're still trying to figure out how to move, as your questions have suggested, how to move past the power of that ideal as what everyone should aspire to.
I agree with you about Irving Gill, and that Horatio West complex in Santa Monica, Ocean Park, near where I live, is actually quite gorgeous. I think an additional sort of design attribute is that a really, really good multifamily unit never has windows on only one side. The designers figure out how to give you multiple sources of light. But my recollection is that Horatio West is now condos, which takes us to another piece of this, which is people generally will not desire to be apartment dwellers precisely because they cannot build wealth. And that's what a home represents. That's what a house represents. Are you also looking at that piece of it, different financing models?
Very much so, because like it or not, that's still the economic and financial model that drives so much of wealth building in this country, and the tax breaks and the other incentives that the federal government provides are largely centered around home ownership. And given that, we need to be thinking about opening new paths to home ownership. So part of this larger effort is work with a number of colleagues, particularly Miguel Sangalang, who's our deputy mayor for budget and innovation, who's very interested in precisely the question that you just asked. What are the new financing models? What are the new home ownership models that can open up this territory to a wider section of the population and really begin to reckon with this history of having excluded huge parts of the population from the benefits of home ownership? So to the extent that this becomes a zoning and design question, it has to do with some flexibility in lot sizes, for example. So we're thinking about a category potentially in a competition that might include the ability to subdivide, not just to build an ADU on a small patch of your backyard, but actually give a homeowner the ability to subdivide a piece of land and sell off pieces of land that will allow home ownership on a smaller lot than the typical LA, 50 by 150 kind of traditionally sized lot. The opposite of that is the ability for, let's say, neighboring properties to combine their property and build, let's say, 6 or 8 units across two properties. And there's some interesting home ownership implications of that, depending on how you think about, again, how you think about lot size. So yes, that question is really central, and there are a lot of my colleagues who are working on that. But that always has to be bound. This is what makes this conversation so tricky. We have to think about particularly those communities that feel vulnerable to displacement and change and speculative investment. At the same time, we need to open up the conversation about the future of housing to future residents of neighborhoods. So part of this thinking that we're doing is taking on that question and balancing people who are in already homeowners or residents versus the needs of future residents of neighborhoods. And that's, of course, at the center of any housing policy.
The third leg of the stool of the American dream is control. A renter, even perhaps a condo owner, has far less control over their environment than a homeowner does. A homeowner can paint the front door whatever color they like. A homeowner can have a dog. Often a renter can't have a pet. Are you looking at that piece of it? Is it something that you can in any way exercise control over?
I think it gets back to the home ownership question and just opening up new paths to home ownership. And to me, this is less a question of density and more a question of flexibility. So our zoning code, particularly in these single family or lower rise parts of the city, is quite rigid. And so there's very little flexibility, even for homeowners, in determining how they would like to use their own property beyond what the state law now allows us to do with second and now through AB 68, third, so-called junior ADUs. So it's really about bringing new levels of flexibility into that territory. And one major part of that flexibility is some new definitions of homeownership. I mean, the idea of the nuclear family, the idea of what family represents, how it's constituted is also changing. And the way that we build housing has not responded quickly enough, in my view, to those shifting definitions of family, extended family. We need to have a conversation about housing that reflects or begins to reflect or adapt to the ways in which these larger societal questions are changing around us.
And you just mentioned that this conversation about housing is largely directed by people who live in houses. Given that something like more than 50% of Angelenos are actually not homeowners, they're renters, would you advocate for more renters to be on design review boards? Because my impression is design review boards are largely run by homeowners.
And not just design review boards, but part of the larger conversation about the future of neighborhoods. Absolutely. It's actually a much higher proportion than that. We have about 2/3 renters in Los Angeles to 1/3 homeowners, and that puts us very, very high in national measures of homeownership. So we have the fourth or fifth highest proportion of renters in the entire country, which would surprise most Angelenos, right? We think of ourselves as a city of houses, as a city of homeowners. And the landscape of housing and zoning is still dominated by the single family parcel. But the economics and rates of homeownership don't match up very neatly with that.
To me, this is about the next generation. And where are they going to be living in LA? Because currently the TOC and the ADUs are not providing the homes for the next generation of families.
So the goal is really to produce the kinds of architectural projects where people can imagine really putting down roots and thinking about living long term that are also sustainable and not using the kind of land that, you know, typical single family subdivision did. And it's really striking that balance. And again, there are really good models from our own architectural history and really good models from other cities around the world about that. And this is true for every generation aspires to think about either home ownership or where they will spend many decades or where they will raise a family if that's what they're interested in doing. And so we need to acknowledge that that will continue to be a kind of universal desire, aspiration, and then produce the kinds of units that will satisfy that desire, but also satisfy our climate and our climate goals, and also and be more affordable, and also address this question of affordability. And that's not, none of those things is going to happen really until we have a conversation about this kind of missing middle scale.
Christopher Hawthorne is the Chief Design Officer at the Mayor's Office in the City of Los Angeles. I'm Frances Anderton. You've been listening to the DNA podcast. And if you enjoy our podcasts, how about you check out Season 2 of Bodies, crw.com/bodies.